Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with Finding Your Summit podcast. Welcome to the show. If you haven't heard us, or if you're a returning guest, we of course welcome you back. Hey, this week we've got a great guest on. Her name is Cheryl O'Loughlin, and she is the current CEO of Rebel Drinks. She is an amazing woman. She was the former CEO of Clif Bar, also the CEO and co-founder of Plum Organic. So this gal knows her way in the business world. She is also the author of Killing It, a heartfelt guide to creating and growing a startup in a healthy, joyful way. And I laugh about that a little bit just because a lot of what we talked about on the show was about the obsession plus depression of running a startup. I've had three different ones and it's just all consuming. And I think a lot of times people think, hey, I'm going to go start my own company. And they don't realize how much work you have to put in, and you can't necessarily equate how much money you make with the amount of effort that you have to put in initially. So just a fascinating conversation with Cheryl, some of the things that she had to go through as she fought her way through near bankruptcy, and she had some other personal issues that we talk about. At the end of the day, she comes out stronger, better for what she's doing and running these different companies and really creating that corporate culture that is established. We're really trying to have that balance in life and work. It's so important, as we all know. So fascinating conversation. Cheryl O'Loughlin, she's the real deal, CEO of Rebel. More of what I've been up to. I keep talking about this, but I am also excited, so excited about my Finding Your Summit e-learning course. You can find that on my website, markpattisonnfl.com. And a lot of what I had to go through was really searching in my soul when I was going through a lot of my adversity about how to really find that pinnacle where I wanted to go, kind of reset my goals, find that new purpose in life. And a lot of what I found is from the things that my old head coaches had taught me, Don James, Jim Moore Sr., and others, about the pyramid of success, John Wooden's ladder of personal and team goals to really get you to that ultimate point to really win in life and have a life of fulfillment. And that's what we're all after, right? You don't necessarily have to be down or out. You could be doing great things and still just tapped out on where you are and where you want to go. So we offer a free PDF. We offer a free assessment. Once you click the link, e-learning course, it takes you over there. And you can get all that stuff, okay? It's free, so check it out. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Violets Are Blue, skincare.com, Cynthia Besteman. She's rocking it, all right? So listen, let's go listen to Cheryl. Here we go.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And today I've got a rock star on my hands. I'm broadcasting live from Sun Valley, Idaho, up to somewhere very mysterious in the wine country because she wouldn't reveal exactly. Cheryl O'Loughlin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. Oh, I really appreciate it. And I will tell you where, in Santa Rosa, which is Sonoma County. And that could be relevant to our discussion. I'll tell you why later.
Okay. No, that sounds great. And you know, part of my past is playing with the Oakland Raiders, and the old training camps used to be in Santa Rosa. So,
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't date myself quite that much because when I got to the Raiders, it was the LA Raiders. And so I heard a lot of the old school guys that had been up in Santa Rosa and caused a lot of chaos up there.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, big time.
I'm sorry I missed that.
Well, so am I, but I got to catch the latter chapter down in LA.
Yeah.
So Cheryl, you are a very fascinating soul, and I want to get into this. And there's a lot of pieces and parts here. And as I mentioned at the outset, before we went on, that we do share a lot in common. And one of the things I want to start with is this book that you have. And I don't want to make this all about the book, but you've got some really killer stuff that's in there. And the name of the book is called Killing It, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Head Without Losing Your Heart. And as a person myself who has started three different companies and One was venture backed. It ultimately, I think, in part cost my marriage, and that was not fun. And so I read something else where you talked about, they really took this to exactly the way you phrased this. I think you said this, but between obsession and depression, the silver lining between the light and the dark. And that's that thing that, you know, you're not going to quit no matter what. And what I found that was interesting in my life was that my greatest strength, and this is after I'm figuring this thing out, like, you know, post-divorce and everything, because I'm really doing a lot of introspection of like how I can be better in life. My greatest strength is not giving up. And I found that my biggest weakness is not giving up.
Yes, so true, man.
Right?
It is the thing that drives so many entrepreneurs. And there's actually studies now, actually a big study called Entrepreneurs on Fire, I think it is, where this was the first of its kind study done by a professor who has taught over at Stanford and at the University of San Francisco. And what he shared was exactly that there is an over-index for entrepreneurs of issues around depression and ADHD and bipolar and divorce and many more things. And it is exactly what you said, what Dr. Michael Freeman came out of the study saying is it's the light and the dark side of our personalities. We're so driven, and that's why we can make these companies happen, but you can cross so easily over into the dark side where it becomes obsession and starts to hurt you, your health, the people around you.
Yeah, no, it's well said. And in you know, so one of the things, I guess more than anything in terms of what the subject that we're talking about is for me has been about awareness. And I'm wondering for you, like let me just step back. So for the listener, and your background is very impressive. CEO of Clipbar, and then Clipbar also introduced Luna Bars, which I think are more marketed towards women. You're the CEO, or were the CEO of Plum Organics, and currently the CEO of Rebel, which is would it be fair to say energy drink, or more just a health juice press type?
It's actually a coconut milk-based elixir, and also we have proteins that have super herbs and adaptogens in them. So, it is unbelievably good, very pure to the core, all plant-based.
Well, we're going to talk more about that because I love everything you just said. I consume every day. You know, I've got this thing called the Seven Summit Smoothie.
We got to get you some Rebel, man.
I feel like kind of a rebel, you know, everything I've gone through. So let's go back to, so that's just like, you know, the headline, right, on those things. And so to be the CEO of anything, especially companies that have great momentum, especially Kiplar and some of these other companies you're either currently or were a part of, like, how did you find that balance, or did it take you some time to get to that place?
Well, you know, balance for me is not a word that I don't know is actually achievable. And I think that's part of it, that we have so much pressure on ourselves to be perfect and, you know, and balance being perfect. And hey, man, it has been a really hard road, just like I know you've experienced, to get there. And, you know, I think if we were to reel back from now, where do I see it from one of the summits, I think, that I've climbed, one of the millions that I've climbed, metaphorically, is that, you know, we get so wrapped up with our identities and our self-worth in our companies. And whereas every number, whether it goes up or whether it goes down, becomes a reflection on who we are as people. And the biggest thing that I learned is that my self-worth does not equal my company. I'm a person with an essence that goes way longer than any company that I have been a part of. And I rediscovered really that, we could go back to what kind of got me to this place, but I was at the depths of depression, and I walked into the basement of my parents' house in Michigan, and I was looking through some old letters that people had written me, and I pulled out one after another, and it talked about from my brothers and someone, one of my sorority sisters, how my passion was something, my enthusiasm that meant so much to them and really was contagious. And I'm like, what happened? I lost all of that. And it was just this moment that said, wait, my essence is not all of this the way I've defined it. My essence is that. And how do I find that back?
So let's frame this up. Where in the wheelhouse of these different companies in your life and being married and going to school and all these things, where did that play into what you just were talking about? You know, where you found that you'd lost yourself and you lost some of that spirit that you had and the essence that your friends had recognized from you. What time frame was all this?
Oh my gosh, that you're dating me. I think it was over when I first started my career was in 1989, 1990.
Yeah.
And now here it is, still running a company, and it's 2019.
So there's been multiple iterations of, you know, you're not running all three of these companies all at one time. So
no.
Is this one of these things where, like, when you're like, how long ago were you when you're running Clipbar?
Yeah. So I joined Cliff in 1998. And then I ended up leaving Cliff in 2007. Mm-hmm. So I was there for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And there in that company, I did not found. I was running for the founder. And then I actually started a company with a buddy of mine, Neil Grimmer, called Plum. And that was from the ground up. And I'll tell you, I thought at Cliff Bar, I knew what it takes to build a company from scratch. I had no idea. And it was a number of events while my time at Plum that came together into the perfect storm that caused my dark side and my dark side to come to unearth itself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, and then I actually had left Plum after 3 years, incredible experience, but I realized, and we could talk about that story a little bit, that I needed for the good of me and eventually the good of the company, I needed to leave. And I ended up going over to Stanford to run the Center for Entrepreneurial Studies at the Graduate School of Business. And that's when I actually wrote the book. And then I went back to running a company again, which I thought I would never, ever do again. But I have learned how to do it in a completely different way.
So do you think because when you're CEO of Cliff Bar, and I'm making some leaps here, so my assumption would be that Cliff Bar has got momentum. They have a financial foundation. It's probably not your money that's at risk. It's company venture money or something, private equity, where you can maybe make a miss or two or three or four, and it's not going to have a major impact on the company because you've planted your seeds in so many different retail outlets, probably worldwide. And now when you jump over to Plum, a lot of those traits that you had as it relates to just being aggressive and inventive, you know, driving revenue and growth and everything else, you don't have quite as long of a leash with Plum as you did with Clip Bar. Do you think in there became that, like, the rub where the rubber meets the road of you having those same, you know, that same drive that you have, but maybe things weren't happening? And so now becomes the rub of, like, relationships, and you're working even harder and maybe you're not making as much progress. Is that accurate to say or not?
Well, it was actually slightly different from that, but I think some of the core things that the principles that you said are true. So at Cliff Bar, it's actually amazingly privately held. It is a very large company now, probably, I would think. I have been gone for a while, but close to $1 billion. And at that time, it is family held. And we were, when I took over as CEO, we were in a financially challenging situation because we had almost sold the company. Gary, the founder, decided not to take any outside money. So we went through that. So there was a little bit of okay, how do you struggle out of that? But at the same time, you said the key thing. It wasn't something that was tied to me. And it was as CEO, but it wasn't there where I felt as much of the pain of the money, because Gary was, he was so extremely generous with it, and it came from him making his own choices because he had the ability at that point to start to do that. When I moved over to Plum, two things actually happened. One, I took on venture money, which I had never taken on before. I never worked with. Yep. And anyone entering the world of venture, I mean, it took fundraise now 8 times. And to learn just the language alone is overwhelming. And at the same time, my husband started a business. And why one entrepreneur is enough, why we thought two entrepreneurs was okay, yeah, is mind-boggling to me at this point. So his business was actually self-funded. And so I had the pressure of a venture-backed company where I ended up and having a very, now in hindsight, recognizing very abusive investor. And I see it now, especially because my investors are so wonderful now.
Yeah.
And my husband's company going belly up in a month and taking all of our finances with it. And so we almost went bankrupt, and we had 2 kids, 8 and 5. So it was the perfect storm of all of these things. And having to be there for my husband, Patrick, who's my best friend in the world, and being, he's Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, who was so depressed he couldn't get out of bed for 3 months and had to go to the Stanford sleep clinic to actually learn how to sleep again. And so I had to pull my, he would say to me at night, you know, please, you know, I mean, in the morning, he'd say, don't leave. And I had to get up and leave to go do my job. So the pressure was enormous. And that's where I kind of eventually went down my dark side.
Okay. So there's a lot of things in there, right? Number one, I have been down the venture path as well. Just down on Sand Hill and pitching. And like you said, you're right. I eventually got funded up in Seattle, where there's a strong venture community up there. Mm. But at the end of the day, what people don't understand, it sounds fun. And, you know, you're dealing with venture capitalists and they're smart and everything else. But, you know, you're literally stepping into a shark tank. And once you give that money away, or that your company away, in exchange for cash, you know, they essentially take over and you now work for them. And it's a whole different dynamic. It's not fun. So I get what you're saying. A large, I think, listenership of this podcast are women. Hi, women. And so I think a lot of a question of other women that are listening to this right now are going to say, you know, like, how do you balance it all? Right. It's just like that 9 to 5, you know, that show. It's just like, you know, you go, you're working, you come home, you've got kids, you've got husband, you know, there's, I don't know what kind of dynamic in terms of traditional sense or whatever. Obviously you're out in the workforce. So, you know, that's a break from that. But in terms of like, how did you guys like what, and I'm, this is the question, if not for other women out there, but for me, like, how did you survive that? Because, you know, my goal in life is, you know, I want a life partner, and I want to make sure that I don't make the same mistakes and I don't repeat those things. And what advice would you have in terms of what was that magic when all hell is breaking loose and, you know, you got holes in the ship and leaks coming up left and right? You know, how did you guys propel yourself through that? Because you're still together, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's stronger than ever. And I think that's, you know, it's a great point, Mark, because you, even in your relationships, you either go one direction or you go another direction. And we, so just to give a little bit more of the story there, what ended up happening, and then I will go to your question. What ended up happening was once he started to recover, I fell apart and I ended up running just constantly to get my mind off of things. And it was my escape from creditors calling us and all of the pressure. And I ended up, people were starting to say to me that I was losing some weight. I thought that was great because who doesn't want to lose a little weight? Oh. And I was started eating a little less. And what I started realizing was there were some numbers that I did control. And those were the numbers on the scale. Mm. So eventually I actually developed anorexia. And that's what kind of led me to my depths and trying to understand even what was going on with me, because I refused subconsciously to recognize what was really happening. And when people ask me about balance, why I said that I don't believe in balance is because I think you are constantly managing your ecosystem and trying to get to the balance, but you're doing it very proactively. You're not going to one day find balance and say, I'm done. This is it. I'm great. And it looks that way maybe from the outside. It is never that way, ever. No matter what your resume looks like, it's never that way. It happens to all of us. We are human. That is the condition, the human condition. But what I do think is important, what I realized in all of this was there are priorities that you've got to understand in your life and what they are. And to me, my husband, my theme, part of my essence, as I was mentioning, is love. And my husband taught me really, truly what unconditional love is. And we're teaching that to our kids. And so to me, I had to go back to that and say, wow, how does love play into my life? And that is getting through this with Patrick together, hand in hand. And it was so easy. We could see it is so easy to start blaming each other. And we resisted that. And when we realized we were going down that path, say, nope, we're in this together. And so that was part of it, is getting through that hand in hand. And what I also realized is that when I even was trying to have time with my kids, I could not focus on them. I was obsessing about everything. And part of what we do as entrepreneurs is that we go and we think we have to work, and you alluded to this, 24/7, because there is that much work to do. Mm-hmm. But what I realize is that the worst thing we can do is to work 24/7. The worst thing we can do is walk away from our relationships. The worst thing we can do is to walk away from our friends because we don't have time. Because those are the things that keep us refreshed and energized as people and remind us who we are at our essence. And what we do is we can bring that back to our companies and bring that energy with us and model it for other people to go and live their lives too, to bring that in the company. We are so much better off when we have that and take that time than we are working all the time. And my investors now, believe it or not, my venture capitalists now get that, and they totally support that. They read my book and still invested in our company, which shows the hardship that I've been through. But I don't think that most venture-backed groups are there yet. It's going to take time, but it's starting to be recognized, and your kind of podcast helps.
Yeah, no, thank you. And another thing about venture people, too, is that a lot of times that whether they have actually run companies or just school taught, yeah. It's part of their bylines, right? Part of their thing is every 3 to 5 years, they're going to turn a new investment over.
Right.
And so business conditions change, companies change, people change, and you have to be able to adapt to, you know, markets, and that doesn't always align with the strategy of what their bylines are to their investors, right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, so I totally get that. So I want to go back on something, though. So on you talked about your husband. What's his name?
Patrick.
Patrick. Okay. So Patrick taught you about unconditional love. You mentioned that. Making that reciprocal, going mm-hmm. back. And I'm not saying anything that you didn't say, but I'm asking, you know, you mentioned that he taught you that, right? Mm-hmm. Unconditional. And I'm wondering why that wasn't already like built into you, or what lessons or what things he gave you that now you can feed back to him so that truly it is hand to hand for what you just said.
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At lairdsuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name Mark P20. That's Mark P20. You're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com.
Truly, it is hand-to-hand for what you just said.
Yeah, I mean, he taught me that because, you know, I lost my father when I was 6 years old. And so I was raised by a single mom who had three kids, and I was the oldest. And so I kind of was, in some ways, not completely, but kind of fending for myself. And my mom wasn't one that expressed a lot love at that time. And I think that she had so much weight that she was carrying in terms of the things that happened to her, in terms of losing her husband at a very young age, that she went into survival mode. And so did I. And so I started to protecting myself, saying, I'm just going to prove, and this goes into my entrepreneurial dark side and light side, I'm just going to prove that I'm great by getting straight A's. And actually, there was one time in elementary school, I was really pissed off because I was used to my history teacher giving me A plus 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 plus, and he only gave me an A plus, and I was really upset. And so I was always driving for this perfection as a solve to maybe that would get me more love, which obviously that is not the source of love.
Yeah.
And what my husband, we dated for 5 years, and we would get in fights and I'd be like, that's the end. He'd, you know, be an hour late to something, I'd think he's dead. but he kept coming back. Yep. And all these times he kept coming back. And even when, you know, in the depths of like me looking at myself and feeling just disgust, he wouldn't notice any of that. I mean, still to this day, I'm like, aren't you noticing this thing in my face? I don't see it. And that is love. That's just pure love. And that's what he taught me.
That's awesome. Well, the other thing that you get, the other blessing that you get that trickles down out of what you're talking about is that since you've been through kind of the ringer, so to speak, you are now able to really transcend and create a phenomenal corporate culture, you know, with your other employees, because you're really understanding and getting that time away from the company can actually really help propel, you know, your people who are there, your employees, to have better productivity and really have a reason why, hey, this is the best company in the world to work for, and have that enthusiasm about what they're doing. And maybe there's something somewhere in there that because of your leadership, they can turn around and, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, you know, starting with your husband, you know, really giving that to you, and now you turning around and obviously giving it back to him, but also I'm sure it trickles down to your kids as well as you know, your employees. It's awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. I changed my title from CEO to Chief Love Officer. So that is my official title at the company, Chief Love Officer.
So how far into, well, there's a number of things. I'm going to get back to Rebel here in a minute. But let's talk about the Stanford Business School mentorship. You know, essentially I did, for the last 6 years, I was I served in the mentorship type program for UCLA football team. I traveled around everywhere, and just because of my past, my best friend's Jim Mora. And so we were able he took me along for that. It was not a paid gig or anything, but it was just all the football games. And then unfortunately his gig ended. So my gig ended, but I was in the same role up at the University of Washington with their business school. And I had kids, you know, that I was mentoring all the time, but it sounds like you were literally on campus, you know, enthralled in the classroom. So you're dealing with a lot of brilliant people.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting, and it was an interesting time in my life because, yes, I was working there full time, and it was amazing. I mean, I have to tell you, I had this picture in my head my whole life that one day I wanted to work for a university where the sun's shining all the time, and, you know, everyone is talking about big world-changing ideas. And then the Stanford opportunity came, and I'm like, oh my God, it's exactly that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Amazing. And we talked about money growing on trees. I mean, you had billionaires teaching classes. And every student there was convinced that they were going to be the next billionaire. And what was so striking to me is they would walk into my office and say, you know, here's my idea. Isn't it this great? I'm going to get all this money to fund it. And they would. But so many businesses fail. Most businesses fail. And what I realize is that they didn't understand how hard it was. And no one talks about it. I mean, even the media, which is, again, why it's so great that you're doing this, no one would talk about it. All you hear are these stories of the people that have made it. And what you don't hear is the stories of how hard it is. And that's why I wrote the book, because I that shouldn't be a big secret. It should be that people go into this thing like you read pregnancy books as you go into having a baby. It might not tell you exactly how bad the pain is, but you still are prepared mentally that something really big is going to happen.
Yeah.
And people need to have that going into entrepreneurship.
Well, I think the other component of that too is that you really have to have a strong why. And you know, or if you want to call it passion, whatever you want to call it, because if you're not, like, for example, you know, for me, if I were to go sell women's underwear or something, I'm not passionate about that, you know? And so, you know, if tough times happen, then you're like, what the heck, I'm going to quit. And and when you're like, this is my baby, like literally, this is my baby, this is my child, I birthed this thing, I put my own money into it, I believe in it, I know it can work, and you're passionate no matter what walls. I mean, I can remember when we had gone out and we'd done a friends and family round, and we got down to our last $8,000 in the bank, and there were still 9 employees in the company. I was just like, how am I going to pull this off? And then 9/11 hit, and and it turned out to be a blessing because people wanted to unplug, and venture people who had said no turned around and came back and said yes. And
but
I mean, we were down to our last like week, and that was it, and no idea. But it's just like it's just too easy to fold your tent. And I think that's also one of the things that I've learned here, being in the mountains in Sun Valley. And you talked about the wine country, and you can get the same thing. Well, really anywhere in the world, but when you take that time out and you really get separated, so it's just not all about who's doing what and making $1 billion, because at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It's just a matter about your life's purpose and where you're going.
It is so true. And I have to say, there is something special, like being in Sonoma County, I can walk out of my home office and people are drinking wine, eating great food. No one's talking about work. And I can go in back into my office and everything's crazy and, you know, so much going on in the company. But then I have my place to walk back outside and breathe.
So
and whether it's also just you're in a crazy place, but taking a time out, that time out is essential.
Beyond having the time to write the book, Killing It, what is the best thing that came out of your experience at Stanford?
Yeah, you know, the best thing that came out was me eventually, after we went through recovery for my eating disorder, eventually taking on a day-to-day CEO gig again. And it is the best experience of my life, because I thought I didn't want to do the day-to-day anymore. It was so done and so burnt out. But having this special experience at Rebel and showing me how it can be is mind-blowing and such an amazingly positive impact on my life and me and what I believe. And I you know, we could talk much more about a Rebel, but you know, it started as a cause. It started as a nonprofit. It didn't start as a company, and that has seeped through the whole company and has changed the whole way I've looked at companies.
Well, okay, so I'm going to get there in just a second, but the question is going back to Stanford. So now I asked you the question, like, what was the best thing? And then this opportunity came up, you know, with Rebel, right? And so as part of that, you're going through your recovery, you're getting back on your feet, you're getting your mind, your soul, your body, you know, back in a place where it's healthy and you're in a great spot again. When you got the opportunity to go be aligned with Rebel, did you just have to have a come to Jesus talk with your hubby and just make sure that all your, you know, your, you like the boxes are checked and that you're not going to fall back in the old patterns?
Oh my God, it's so funny that you asked that. No one asked me that.
Well,
ever.
And that's why this is finding your summit, right?
You must have been a fly on the wall. So I got asked to be part of Rebel on the board. And they were working on their first institutional round of funding. And the man who was the CEO at the time and also was the founder of the company, who is the most brilliant beverage creator that I've ever seen in my entire life, Paulo Hawken. He never wanted to be CEO, had been for 3 years. He's like, get me out of this job, please. So I said, listen, I'll help you out. I'll come out of the board to be interim CEO for the company to help raise this round. And I started learning more about the company. I'm like, this company is pretty freaking amazing. And I said to Patrick, well, you know what? I kind of am a little bit inspired to go do this again and jump back in a little more permanently. And he said, no way. And we went back and forth for actually a couple months on the thing. And he would see me as I came out of my work with Rebel every day, super energized, super psyched, but with a different point of view on it. In terms of, again, my relationship to it from a self-worth standpoint. And finally, he said, you know what? I can support you. You're ready. Go for it. But I didn't do it until he said, okay.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And, you know, it's really taken that time to be patient and thoughtful about how you would approach, you know, your now third or fourth time as being CEO.
Yeah.
So were they asking you, were they trying to lure you in to be CEO? Is that how the transition happened?
I think, you know, it's so funny that you say that because I think to a certain extent, yes, but they didn't push me too hard. It's just, okay, I'll do this interim thing. Well, maybe I'll do it a little longer. Okay, well then, and then I started saying, actually, I'm having fun. So they were originally looking for the permanent CEO and we started slowly backing down that search. So I think it was both of us starting to do a dance together and then the dance came in sync. I mean, they definitely asked me to do it, but I was ready to do it.
Yeah, no. And you know, the thing that's great too, is that again, you've got that mutual respect for Patrick, your husband. And, you know, you really made this a joint decision. This wasn't just like, I'm going to blaze my own path again and just leave him in the trail and then, you know, he can take it or leave it. And that's, you know, obviously that's a true partnership. So the nonprofit, I think that you're talking about is
can
not.
Can I just say one thing about that? Because I think that is a really profound thing that I don't know if people fully embrace, especially new entrepreneurs, which is that it cannot be just about you. And again, we think about entrepreneurship as a solo summit, and it is not. It is with your partner. If you have a partner, they have to be in it with you. They have to be 100% in it with you, and you're with them. So it's not only them signing up and saying, I'm going to be there for you. It's you signing up to say, I'm going to be there also for you. So when you come home to me with your daily frustrations, I don't ignore them and say mine are more important, which is what happens a lot of times.
Yeah.
Both of us together.
Well, that's part of the reason why when you get married, you say for worse or better, for this or that, right? And that's what that means. And somehow or another, after circumstances and time, some of those words tend to get deleted from the sheet, and that's where things fall apart. So again, I'm happy for you that you guys have been able to really have a great union and a great partnership.
Aww.
And that you're alive. And, yeah, no, it's awesome. I love that. So I was going to say, actually you said it and I'm going to mention it. So the nonprofit, I think that you're mentioning is not for sale.
Yes.
Right. So I'm trying to understand how the company did not start out as Rebel. It started off as not for sale. So can you set that up? What not for sale is, and then let's like backpedal into Rebel and how that became the company.
So not for sale is a nonprofit that whole goal is to fight human trafficking, the sex trade and the slave trade, which just so your listeners know, it is the fastest growing illegal industry in the world. It is second to the drug trade. So this is a massive problem, and people are just starting to become aware of how bad this problem is. So that was the goal of Not For Sale. what happened was they were working on an issue at the time in this area in Peru called Madre de Dios. And the local indigenous community was basically being slave trade to middlemen that were coming into their community and basically buying their what they grew for nothing and selling it in Lima for exorbitant prices. So these people were basically enslaved. And what Dave Batstone, who is the founder of Not For Sale, said is, we need to create a solution to this problem that's sustainable. So he brought a group of people together in a summit that he called the Montero Circle. And these were the best thought leaders he knew. There was an agronomist part of that. There was Jeremy Affelt, who's a Giants baseball player, a Major League Baseball player, and a handful of others. And he broke this whole group into teams. And he boldly said, and this is what I love about Dave, he's just so bold. He said, listen, I don't know what idea is going to come out of this summit to address this issue, but I'm going to fund it no matter what it is. And he didn't know. They could have been the worst ideas on the planet, but he just said he's going to do it, which was extremely motivating to the group.
Yeah.
And it ended up that the team that actually had Jeremy Affelt and this agronomist in it came up with the idea they called the smart tea. And the idea behind that is, hey, why don't we buy the local super herbs and also known as adaptogens from the local area. In this case, it was cat's claw. Adaptogens are this amazing herb that's been known throughout the millennia, but not in this country, for helping to mitigate stress, actually, when it actually helps to adapt your body, what your body needs to help you either calm down or, if you need it, give you energy. It literally adapts to you.
This is a tea.
This was a tea at the time. The idea was a tea.
Got it.
And then fast forward, they ended up hiring Paulo Hawken, our chief innovation officer and co-founder, who, again, is a brilliant, he just understands the art of food, the art of food and how it tastes, and it marries it with health. And so they hired him, and he ended up bringing forward the name Rebel, which stands for roots, extracts, berries, barks, and leaves, actually what's in the product, but it also has brand imagery that is unbelievable. Me being a marketing person in my background is like, I salivated over how great this name is, brilliant name. And we introduced actually originally a tonic, which was a tea-based drink. That was before my time. And then when I came into the company started in 2012. I came in 2015. And Paulo had just introduced this coconut milk-based elixir that we were talking about at the beginning of the show. And I looked at how that elixir was doing. It had just been introduced about 6 months before, and the thing was on fire. And there were five of us in the company at this time. So I said, you know what, guys? We need to get rid of this tea, and we need to focus on the elixir because that's our lead horse, and the company took off from there. But to this day, we can talk about this partnership with Not For Sale is we are interwoven with them. So in other words, Dave Batstone sits on our board from Not For Sale. So he is our guiding light to help us to make sure that we're moving towards co-creating, which we call it, co-creating a future without human trafficking, because Rebel became a tool to do just that. And we also do two ways that we're very deeply connected. One is we give 2.5% of the net sales of every single bottle of Rebel back to Not For Sale to do their work, which started as rehabilitating survivors of trafficking through long-term counseling, housing, education, and work. But there's a critical component of that because that part addresses the issue down the stream after it's happened. What we realized is that we have to address this issue up the stream if we're ever going to create this future that we dream of. And that is we have most of the world's poor, of which are farmers. And we're buying all of our ingredients. Now we have over 70 ingredients from farmers throughout the world. if we don't make sure that our farmers are protected in terms of their human rights, their being paid a fair wage, their access to education, their access to healthcare, to water, and not only that, that they have principles, they're using regenerative principles for their farming so that they can farm forever.
Yep.
They will become vulnerable to trafficking because they will become desperate. And so we have to address the issue up the stream and down the stream. So this partnership is completely enmeshed in the approach completely in terms of how we run the company. And it came from our birth.
Yeah, you know, it sounds a little bit like I did. I was a long-term business partner of Starbucks as a supplier, and so I was down at their headquarters and got to know Howard Schultz fairly well.
Yeah.
And so it sounds a little bit like their model in terms of, I mean, it's not, but you know, really making sure that in various foreign countries, you know, they're going in, they have these different farms that they work with, and you know. They work with them in terms of the beans, and then they ship them back to the States, and they come in, and it goes through this whole cycle and this whole process. And with you guys, obviously these are in foreign countries, right, where you're getting your products, and they are being sent here. And where do you guys actually put these different drinks together?
In Southern California.
Oh, you do? Okay,
yeah.
Great. So that's being done domestically. And so, like you said, it's going upstream, downstream, and it's creating awareness and money, and you're actually empowering – yeah, and then empowering these different farmers so that they aren't tempted to go, you know, sideways and end up in these bad situations.
Well, and it's interesting too, as you're saying it, what I find fascinating the more I get deep into it is how much there's we play at the intersection of. And really, at the end of the day, we all do because we're all part of a living ecosystem, whether we recognize it or not. We play at the intersection of humanity, the environment, and the economy. So in other words, we have to support people's livelihoods from the humanity standpoint, from you know, our headquarters throughout our whole entire supply chain and all of our partners. And in terms of the environment, if we're not helping to draw down the global warming, what happens in these various countries, and it's happening in Australia in a big way right now, is that global warming is affecting people's livelihoods. So again, if you just address humanity without addressing the environmental component, the house of cards falls apart. And from an economic standpoint, We Rebel is a tool through an economic means to help this. So it's all three working together. And when you think about it societally, we, and especially in Western culture, bifurcate everything. It's like the humanities over here and our business is over here. The environment is over here, but they all interplay.
Yeah.
That is the way the living system works. And we have to start to think about things from the standpoint of how do you think about living systems versus the old way of doing business, which is through machines and mechanics.
Well, look, I'm involved in a project called Water Boys. And there's a guy named Chris Long plays for the Philadelphia Eagles who started this 4 years ago as part of his first class. Which when he was down in Tanzania, in Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, and he invited, I think there was four or five ex-NFL players along with military Green Berets. And we went down there, we raised money, awareness, and then went into these different villages. And
awesome.
So I personally, with Jim Mora, raised $47,000. We funded our own well, which is a whole nother story behind that. But, you know, his vision originally was to fund 32 wells, mostly because these girls go and walk with 5 gallon buckets on their head down to these, you know, awful drinking water conditions. And whether it's disease in the water or they get raped or killed by an animal, you know, it's just bad stuff. Right. So he's really, so now we're up to 55 wells and they have another class that's
awesome.
Going down. Yeah. But the point I was just going to make is, you know, it's really about, when not only many people give, and that's awesome, but it's when it's done in a way that you can actually go and you experience, you can see that joy on those people's face, right? And the heart, I mean, it was amazing. It really changed me. It changed a lot of people on that trip, right? Because they cheered us like we were the Beatles. And it was just all for to have and turn on this little, you know, thing called a spigot to have water come out. And they were so grateful for that. And, you know, when we start getting hung up in our days about this or that. So I commend you for, I'm sure there's some element where you're going to these faraway lands to visit, you know, these different farmers at some point in time in your career. You've done that, where you really understand, you know, it goes in a big loop in this ecosystem of humanity, where you really feel purposeful about what you're doing. And that, again, is just another element to help drive this business to a higher level.
It's so true. And even I think that was so beautiful what you said, because we, it's very easy to make assumptions of people consciously or unconsciously and how their lives are or should be when you aren't experiencing it directly with people. And, you know, I'll tell you that I'm co-leading an initiative that's going to be for the natural foods industry, natural products industry, which is about justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We call it the JEDI Project. And the reason why we're doing this is because we have to. We have to because it is the human thing to do. But even putting that aside, it is once you're able to see things from another person's viewpoint, you begin to see ways of innovating that you've never seen before. It is proven that companies with more diverse, even board, are more profitable. And it all comes from the fact that we are only ourselves the way we are. We can't see it the way other people see it. And I am a woman. I experience things as a woman. I experience things as a Jewish woman. But I am white. I don't know what it's like to be a woman of color. I don't know what it's like to be gay. I don't know what it's like to be permanently disabled. And it is bringing all of those people into the fold, people, immigrants, where we start to see that humanity, that we see opportunities across the board. And so that what you said is so powerful, because that is the whole basis of the argument for why this kind of work is so important in JEDI.
Yeah, love that. So let me ask you this in closing here, as the chief rebel officer of love, where is the company? Where can you find the product? And what is your, I think you might've mentioned just a few of those things in terms of like, what is the next evolution? You know, maybe it's more products or more market share or worldwide domination or something. where are you guys going in that whole, you know, that trajectory?
That whole scheme. Well, you can find Rebel at natural food stores, Whole Foods, tons of independent natural food stores. You're just starting to see it. We've been very disciplined about our approach, but now in California, you can find it in Target. You can find it in various Safeways. Fred Meyer, part of the Kroger division. So it's just starting to be in more mass accounts.
Yeah.
In terms of where we're going, we're very thoughtful in terms of how we expand. We go nice and slow. And the reason for that is we want to make sure when we're in the store, the product is moving. So we didn't move into grocery until we knew there was so much demand in natural. It was just telling us there, the natural demand is so strong. We need to get this to more people, to nourish more people, to do more to fight human trafficking. And so what we're thinking about is, what does this Rebel platform mean? Right now, it means coconut milk-based elixirs and proteins. What else does it mean for people and people's lives? If we're a product that is about nourishing people through plant-based functional power, what does that look like? What does that mean? So we're tweaking about, and we have some new products coming out that will expand that offering. We're very excited about that. I brought in a stellar executive leadership team that I adore every minute of working with, and they're super experienced, so they know how to scale companies. So we're on that next phase of, okay, now we're in our next phase of growth. What does that mean, and how do we do it when part of our basis for being is a company that's fighting human trafficking? So how do you know, really pull up the head part of the business while we're keeping the heart part of the business it just as important as part of that.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I mean, look, I love everything from, you know, Clif Bar, part of when you do these athletic endeavors that I do, right? It's about fueling your journey in the right way. And so, You know, I've had many, many Clif bars. I've had a few Luna bars, even though I know that's more based towards women.
Wouldn't believe the phone calls we got when we first introduced it from guys.
I bet. I know Plum Organics is more geared towards kids. But for sure, I want to take some Rebel up the mountain on Everest. And it'll be awesome to be up there and hold that thing straight in the air. And
send me your address and you got it.
That's awesome. Well, listen, thank you for the chat today, for your transparency. You're a star, and I'm so happy that you've made it your own journey, and you've got amazing things going on with Rebel and Not For Sale, the charity that you guys are deeply involved in. So congratulations on all your successes.
Thanks, Mark. I'm so honored to be on your show and so impressive what you're doing. And thanks for spreading this kind of message. It's really important.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.